So, back to Stephanie's blog.
Well, this is, I mean, I guess I haven't lost Stephanie's blog. I mean, it's all in there.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of, we've added some Andy and Steve on top, but it's all in there.
Welcome to the Scrum Facilitators Community Podcast, the place for real conversations around Scrum.
So, welcome to Scrum Facilitators blog reviews. We're just coming up with the name. This is the first time we're doing this. Hopefully, we're going to be doing it a lot more. I'm saying we.
Let's see how this one goes.
Yeah, I'm saying we, and let's see how this goes, because
you might regret this.
Andy Hiles is with us. So, Andy, how are you today?
I am good. I had a nice long walk back from dropping my car at the garage, and then the garage phoned me up and said, the bill I thought I was expecting isn't going to be as bad, which is always a good bit of news. So yes, I'm good. How are you?
Well, I went for a run this morning to get over the run that I went on Wednesday night.
Nice.
Yeah, so I went down to the local athletics club and did a session with them. Thursday just seemed to be awful. So I thought, right, I'm going to try and get my legs going. And I was running like an old man this morning. Because I am an old man. So, the legs are failing me. So, thank you for listening. The intention of this is that Andy and I, we're going to look at blog posts because you're busy. And we also need to be looking at stuff as well, just to keep our knowledge going and also keep our appetites there. So we're looking at blog posts on scrum.org. We're also looking at blog posts on Pro Kanban. As well, both Andy and I are Scrum.org trainers and we're Pro Kanban trainers as well. So best of both worlds. So we are randomly picking, really, or looking at items that catch our eyes or catch our interest, which we think would be interesting to you. Okay, so these are our opinions. They're not Scrum.org opinions. Here comes the waiver, the disclaimer. They are not Scrum.org opinions. They're not Pro Kanban opinions. These are just random thoughts from Andy and Steve.
Even worse, they are opinions based upon other people's opinions from Scrum.org.
Yeah.
What could be better than that?
You know, it's
people having an opinion about something else that people have had an opinion about.
But what
we'll skip that bit. We'll ignore that.
We will link to, we'll provide the links in the chat or whatever. You know, we'll do that stuff that you get on blog posts, on podcasts, sorry, of how you can find them. So we're going to try and keep this as a regular thing as well. So that's our invitation or our commitment to you.
Should we get into it?
Yes.
Because we're waffling. Let's get into it. So the whole purpose of this was to have a look through these Scrum.org blogs. And there are a few quite genuinely didn't catch my eye. But the one that actually on that list that did was a blog post by Stephanie Ockerman, which is called How to Choose the Right Sprint Length in Scrum, which I found immediately really interesting because this is probably one of the internal debates that Scrum Masters will have, one of the debates that organizations should have. And I think, I think that's the emphasis, right, is are you debating this within your Scrum teams, within your organization? What does the length of a sprint mean to you? That's the Andy Hiles kind of thinking about this and where Stephanie kind of draws from, which is all around what are the factors that you could use in order to determine a sprint length, you know, above other things, right? And so Stephanie kind of talks around kind of the most basic and first principle, which is looking at the feedback the cadence and need for feedback from the business, right, as a determining factor. Now, when we look at Scrum says no more than a month, and that's quite obvious, good and obvious, and you know, why would you, right? And it's kind of, why would you ignore a sense of feedback? What purpose does that provide a business? What purpose does that provide value to the customer if you extend that, right? The other way of looking at that is if for whatever reason and whatever cadence that you pick, what are the risks associated with not doing it sooner, right? So if you're going to wait a month, what are the risks of waiting longer? what are you in fact ignoring or purposefully, there must be a better word for purposefully ignoring. Maybe you can think of that in the background, but this idea of kind of like purposely ignoring feedback loops. So one of the first points she draws upon is kind of looking at that kind of responsive change in the market, you know, and for those people who are working in Scrum teams that are not, you know, direct market, you know, business to customer markets, maybe you deliver internally, right, before a grand, you know, which is a majority of people building products within Scrum is we're facing internal really before some grand release happens. But there's still a need for a feedback cadence there. And that shouldn't be ignored.
Stephanie actually puts in the blog post, she quotes Ken Schwaber, one of the signatures of the Scrum Guide, basically, a sprint should be as short as possible and no shorter. So, you know, and it's, I was thinking when you were talking there, Andy, about how often the length of the sprint has already been dictated to the teams by, you know, somebody else. And it's like, oh, well, we do monthly sprints here. And it's like, oh, okay. And we have to do monthly sprints because...
God, when have you ever met a team? Well, apart from that one case, we did that bit of work with a team that wanted 1 month sprints. But I mean, you know, sprint lengths just gets dictated to people, right? It's kind of like, oh, we're doing 2 week sprints. Why?
Because
there was an interesting case, bit of work that I did where we looked at the sprint length, and they were doing 3 week sprints, which is kind of a you know, fine if it suited them. And then we kind of asked why, and it turns out they wanted 2 weeks to develop and 1 week to test.
lovely.
Yeah, that's what a sprint is. Mini waterfall. So that was quickly educated.
I've experienced a 3 week sprint, and it was really strange because obviously, well, not obviously, we go through the classic month or the 2 weeks. In fact, actually, I've done a week sprint, but then I've only come across the 3 week sprint once, and it felt a little bit strange, just the fact that it was 3 weeks. And it's like, and I asked the team, hey, why? And so, well, because it takes us time to get going, and then we get going, and then we deliver something. It's like, oh, okay.
So one of the teams I worked with went from 2 to 3 purposefully on the basis they found the 2 week cadence of Scrum. So we were working with Scrum with Kanban system, and they found once they got into flow, they found the regularity of Scrum events too much.
Okay.
So they went, do you know what? We want to actually, we're doing, because they were releasing, they were building, they were regularly, they were chatting every day, they were refining, they were doing everything really, really good. So the Scrum overhead, right? Because Scrum does have an overhead and we can't ignore that.
No.
The Scrum overhead became too much for that team. So they said, like, okay, look, let's just park that a little bit away so that we don't lose the ability to inspect and adapt and provide transparency about where we are to stakeholders and formally identify that space. But it doesn't feel like so much of an overhead when we're actually doing a whole load of really, really cool stuff with our product backlog, regularly reviewing, refining, releasing, updating, all that kind of really good stuff. So, you know, that's a really good example of where extending a sprint length could be highly beneficial.
Yeah.
You know, on the basis that you are already providing value, you're not extending it just to do some more testing, right? And that isn't the point.
You mean the team are working out what works for them?
Yeah, well, self-management's kicking in. Yeah. Right? And I think it's, you know, that's the trainer answer, but I think it's more than that. It's about the team finding the best, like you say, what works for them, but something that still provides value and they can work within boundaries that they can dictate. And I think the autonomy is the important thing. So when you've got that dictation of you're going to do 2 weeks, right? And people are then forced into a box, you know, in terms of they can't physically find a way out of that. They have to deliver every 2 weeks, or that's the kind of, you know, the feeling, and they can't because of organizational constraints, and then you get a whole load of stresses, right?
Very true. Back to Stephanie's blog.
Well, this is, I mean, I guess I haven't lost Stephanie's blog. I mean, it's all in there.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of, we've added some Andy and Steve on top, but it's all in there. The interesting one about that sprint length consistency, right? So Stephanie leads into kind of maintaining sprint length. It kind of provides a regular cadence and stability and predictability. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been saying more often, you know, well, Steve, you know, my definition for Scrum was a conversation framework. I've not changed that. I've added a risk control framework as a definition. And so the kind of desire to control risk through regular cadence could be incredibly useful when you have the regularity of feedback and conversation. So that's kind of like, we know that stuff. The only thing that was the only thing that's playing on my mind is there was one team, and maybe it was just a complete anomaly, right? And I think it was within, I think the control boundaries meant that actually Scrum wasn't the right thing, but we were using Scrum events as a placeholder for a conversation. And so what we were doing is we started looking at the features that needed to be delivered, and we were going, well, that feature feels like it's going to take us about 3 weeks. So that's feature one, right? Yeah. The next feature looks like it's going to be 2 weeks. So that's feature two. The next one, 2 weeks. The next one, 3 weeks or a week or whatever, right? And so we actually played with the cadence of feedback that suited the team delivery.
Yeah.
So, we didn't break the Scrum rules so much that we kept all the Scrum events, but that regularity was broken. The only thing that kind of brings me to why I think that worked as it did is we know it was a short experiment.
Yeah.
We know we had a limited amount of work to do. It wasn't like typical, if we think about, like, you know, complexity uncertainty, there wasn't a typical complexity and uncertainty problem as a total solution to go and provide value. That was the answer to the problem was kind of fairly well known.
Yeah.
So we're kind of, you know, in whatever Kinevin space you want to be in, and, you know, if you want to use the Stacey matrix, we're kind of like further down to the left, right? We still had complexity and uncertainty, but we worked in a way that actually meant that we were outcome driven totally, rather than led by a cadence.
Okay. So, and this is going to take us off into a different tangent, possibly. How did you deal with predictability if you've got the sprint length? Because that is one of the things that people say is, you know, consistent length helps with predictability about what the teams can do and all that. Was that a problem, or did that not even matter?
Well, here's the interesting thing, right? What did we need to be predictable about? In Scrum, I'm not challenging, by the way, but actually, you know, what do you need to be predictable about in from a Scrum context?
Deliver something.
Yeah, so delivering some kind of outcome, you know. So the way we approached work is, we were a highly functional, well long lived team. Everybody knew each other. Great, you know, way of working. The risk factor of kind of any team functional relationship change was low, so we knew kind of everybody's skill set and stuff. So the only risk factors going in were the uncertainty of kind of solving the technical problems, which the team felt they could overcome without kind of any outside help. So
the stakeholders, you're doing the sprint reviews, you know, wasn't that annoying for them, saying, oh, this week's 2 weeks, this week's 3 weeks, now you're doing a week? Or
No,
they just more like, focused on actually what was being delivered and just...
Yeah, they didn't care about how regularly we met. It was about, did you complete this lovely feature?
Where have you spent
my money? Here we have. So, you know, I can see cases where forced cadence could actually lead people down a path of, I don't know, stress, building the wrong thing. I don't know, feeling like they have to deliver something. I think there are probably edge cases.
Yeah.
But also, if you're actually sitting in those edge cases, do you need Scrum, right? Actually, could we have just kind of done away with lots of the Scrum practices? You know, actually what we were doing were Kanban. And yeah, realistically, that's what we were doing. But yeah, it's just kind of interesting.
It sounds like you had the discipline of keeping the events in place, and because that's where the conversations were happening, and it was just where you were. Yeah. But you were living value.
And I'm in danger of kind of talking about camo practice, so I'm going to kind of like come back to the whole sprint legs thing. But it's I think again it plays into that world of when you start to think about flow. How does flow work with cadence in terms of really regular cadence in order to understand predictability? We understand that, but do you need what people feel like Scrum gives you is this kind of. Again, this is why I call Scrum a conversation framework. It's just like these endpoints for conversation.
Mm.
Actually, do they force not bad conversation, but do they force conversation that actually doesn't need to happen? Maybe that's a different, maybe that's a different discussion for a different day,
for a different blog post.
But anyway, so I guess all I'm saying is I don't know the answer to that question. They're probably edge cases, but we know predictability and stability need a regular cadence, in order to understand. Maybe the team I was working with was hyper matured and we were just like, top of our game. Probably not, but you know what I mean. It's just like, maybe we transcended
went to a higher plane of
we've transcended agile.
Yes.
It was a great anyway, it was just a good example of kind of that consistency pushing the boundaries there. So
okay.
But anyway, so that was my takeaway from Stephanie's blog. Actually, it was really good to kind of see Stephanie articulate the choices and the risks and all of those things. And also it got me thinking about the pushing past the what ifs. What if you have too much? What if you don't have enough? Actually does also might get people thinking, should we do Scrum, right? Is it actually working for us? And that's probably the challenge I always want people to think about is does Scrum work for you? Do you need Scrum? Yeah. Or is it the fact that you're not doing Scrum in a way that could be benefiting you better, right? So is there improvement in your Scrum practice? So there's, again, with all of these blogs, it's probably sitting in there, but I thought it was just kind of an interesting topic to go and pick up on.
Yeah, no, it is. And again, we'll put the link into the show notes, if that's what you call them. I don't know.
Recording
notes. Yeah. So you can have a look and see which one we're talking about from Stephanie Ockerman. So,
hey, Steve, what have you been reading?
Oh, you've got cheese. So, Andy, thank you for asking. So I, as well as looking at Stephanie, and I didn't go into as much detail as you with that one, but I picked up a blog post by Simon Neesfee. And this is part of his series of Agile principles. And this one is business people and developers must work together daily.
They must.
Yeah. I mean, how often have you been part of a team where, requirements come down from on high or it's, you don't see the people actually needing the work or needing you don't see the people actually asking for it. It comes through from somebody else. And Simon in his blog post talks about when he was a junior developer and he says that, often that would happen. These requirements would come down from somebody almost given to them as a set of requirements. And Simon's got questions. Simon's got, uncertainty around what's actually being asked. So then he has to go ask somebody. And that within Scrum could be the product owner. If it's coming, doing the users into the product owner and the product owners and really understand the product, there's delay. I mean, we talk about this on the actual product owner course, the different types of product ownership and the benefits that you get. So what Simon's talking about here is really having that scribe product owner, so not being able to answer the question. So that doesn't encourage delay, it just brings delay with it, because otherwise what do you pick up? So Simon's blog post talks about what we should be doing, and he doesn't say that basically teams shouldn't have this connection. He's talking having people with those skills, business analysts in there, to be able to get that information and to help the team to understand what it is the user is actually wanting. And there's a quote here, which I think a quote: a skilled business analyst can bring benefits. They ensure the detailed view of what's required is created up front and helping explore things that the end user may not consider that can save time. Because often a user might ask for something, believing that they want something, and it's only until we put it in front of them they go, "Ah, yeah, now I see it. I don't want that. I wanted X. And this is where a good business analyst can actually help and work with that user to get those requirements and go, do you mean this? Do you want that?
So is Simon advocating for a business analyst to sit in between the developers and...
No, what he's talking about is wanting people not just to take what's given to them.
Yep.
And to implement that. And that's often something that we do see, that it's not that questioning, or when there is that questioning, the delays happen. So it's working in conjunction with the business. And this always irks me when we say working with the business, because, hey, aren't we part of the business anyway? You know, we're part of an IT team or a delivery team or whatever, but we're seen separately. And because, for whatever reason, we're seen separate, and we get a list of requirements and we work through them and that kind of stuff. So he's not saying that at all. What he's saying is that we should be working closer together with the business, actually on a daily basis, talking to people or having people in those positions that actually have that business understanding and go, this is how we see the product being used. So he's wanting to get that as close. Actually, linking into kind of what Stephanie was talking about, you know, how often do you want that feedback? Getting it as close as possible so there isn't that delay. Because if you bring in delay, you know, you're going to deliver something that maybe isn't as valuable. You might miss the boat on getting that out there. So what we're wanting is it as close as possible so we can get the results as quickly as possible. Validate assumptions is what Simon's talking about here. And I think, well, I know because this is what he's saying, you know, from his experience and definitely from ours, you know, I was an ex-software developer as well, as well as Simon, and you've built great things as well. one time at Bandcamp. Bring them in close. And it's kind of obvious to us, because we talk about this a lot, I think, when we're delivering training.
I'm just kind of curious. So the practical. So does he provide any kind of like practical suggestions? Bar, you know, we know it's kind of talk to each other.
There isn't that. It doesn't leap out as, you know, do this. But he's just talking about this is the position we should be in. This is where we should be. Not having handoffs.
So I guess what would be the suggestion for a Scrum Master observing this as a anti-pattern going on at the moment for them? Because it's one thing to kind of go, yeah, just talk to each other.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, you know, the last thing you need is to put a scribe in the way. That's probably where you are right now, which is leading kind of like to the dysfunction. So yeah, what would be the advice?
You know, as a Scrum Master, you know, I'd be looking to say, look, where is this waste coming or wait time coming in? How as a team can we reduce it? How efficient is our process? You know, we're back onto flow again. How efficient is our process? Where are the wait times?
And is this an impediment for the Scrum Master? Yeah, sorry, I'm kind of asking. I feel like I'm going into like, you know, a scrum.org assessment.
And how long have you felt this?
You know, it'd be a great assessment question, right? You know, your Scrum team are finding problems, you know, getting understanding the business requirements. As a Scrum Master, is this an impediment? You know, what would you do?
Well, what would you class as an impediment? Definition of impediment is.
An impediment is an issue that the Scrum team cannot solve themselves, right? And lies outside the Scrum team, i.e. You know, access to business people probably is an impediment, right? You know, would that be obviously Scrum Master to go and help resolve, but does it fall on the Scrum Master's shoulders, or is this a Scrum Master product owner, or is this something that actually the Scrum team collectively could challenge the business to go and say, we can't deliver value to you unless you give us more information.
Yeah. Right? I'd say it's a Scrum team issue.
You know, this is where it kind of gets really highly nuanced into the kind of where you are organizationally and people's confidence or willingness to go and challenge, you know, because you get lots of teams where people will not want to, for belief that they are contractually bound to just be servants, right? Yeah. We won't challenge the business because they will stop paying us, right? It's kind of like, that's very
There's also, it's a bit scary. It's a bit scary talking to these people if you're not used to it. Yeah. You know, that, hey, yeah. that's the senior exec of whatever.
And they own my job.
Yeah. And they live in that building over there that's got the nice coffee, and I'm across here that's got, you know, just happy if we've got a light bulb. I don't know, going back to days of old. So we just don't mix.
Yeah, and this is, you know, it's one of the, it's just an interesting space to be in that we will have seen, I've certainly been in, lots of people probably be feeling that they're in, you know, I think what can you do or who should be tackling it? Well, you know, for me, it's a scrum team collectively to surface, right? The developers to surface, scrum team to have a conversation in the retrospective, absolutely. Then I kind of see kind of a bit of a joint alliance between the product owner and the scrum master, basically going to drag, you know, whatever needs to be dragged from whoever is, you know, asking for this stuff. Can we get you closer?
Yeah.
You know,
what would it take?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's where you would start.
And if you've got a product owner that doesn't have those skills, you know, they've got confidence, this is where a scrum master comes in, you know, and helps them. Let's go make some friends, you know, because at the end of the day, we need to deliver something. And, you know, it's let's go make some friends. Let's go get some contact. Let's bring them close.
But again, I think the worst case, and I've seen this quite a lot, is it's these kind of anything that lies with the business, people kind of just going, oh, it's a product owner problem, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, or just going, it's a scrum master problem. But when you've got something, actually, this is highly contentious. This could actually be quite confrontational, potentially.
Yeah.
This could be quite a hard thing to solve. You can't do it on your own shoulders unless you are super able just to kind of like buffer things off, right? Go, you know, massive, like, I don't give a monkey's shield, right? I think, you know, you will need those allies in the business. And that's your job as a product owner and scrum master and developers to go and build those. Somebody will know, right? Somebody will be able to do it. And if, and again, it's one, you know, you could also look at it from this perspective. And if the business don't want to know, it tells you a lot more.
Yeah. Are we focusing on the right thing for the business? You know, why aren't you bothered? You know, often that question of like, oh, we can't get stakeholders to attend a sprint review. It's like, okay. So in fact, I was having this conversation just this week. So look, make it visible how much it costs a sprint, you know, and then that should get their attention. And if it doesn't, maybe
not. But I only want to know when it's done, Steve.
Yes, but Andy, it's cost you £100,000 to get to this point. You know, it's that's a serious wedge of money. And if you,
I've wasted £100,000 and it's not done. Does that scare you?
Should do.
Yeah. But, cool.
Yeah. So look, so that was Simon Niesfi's blog post. Again, we'll put the links into the bits that goes with it. This, you know what I mean. So so look, if you found this useful, let us know, because we need your feedback, linking back into actually what we've just been talking about. If you like listening to Andy and myself go through blog posts, let us know. If there's some blog posts that you've read and you want to share with us, and you think maybe, hey, we'll just get it on this. We are going to do this regularly. Andy's just going, what? We're going to do this regular once a month, get into a rhythm of doing this, because you know, you're busy folks, and if we can just highlight some things that, hey, have a look at this, this is a useful thing to have a read, have a help your knowledge, that's why we're here. So Andy, from me it's a goodbye, and from you it's a
always goodbye. So, always goodbye. That sounds terrible. Good to see the back of you. There we go.
Have you got anything in a Bristolian accent you can say it in?
Probably, but I don't think it's polite.
Ah, okay. So from Yorkshire, it's ta-ra.
All right. See you later, mucker. Something like that.
Okay. See you later, mucker, and ta-ra until next time. So. Thank you for listening to the Scrum Facilitators Community Podcast, the place for real conversations around Scrum. Do you have a story to share in this podcast?
get in touch with us at podcast@scrumfacilitators.com.